What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere. Visit Hyland.com.
Hmm? Ah! Huh.
Hey, everybody. I'm Rima.
And I'm Bae.
And this is Strange Indeed, a podcast dedicated to the Apple TV show Lisey's Story.
This week, we are covering episode 8, the finale of Lisey's Story, titled, well, Lisey's Story.
Well, indeed it is. Yeah, they didn't have that until I think after the episode came out did they release the title, because I didn't have it last week. So that was the first time. So yeah, this was, I think, an appropriate title to this week's. Do you agree?
It sums up. Yeah, like, the whole thing is, but then, yeah, I mean, the specific like reason, of course, being that story left in the case, and we'll get to all that.
But we're definitely going to get to all that. Yeah, I'm excited to talk about it. This was definitely an interesting wrap of the series. I know we're going to have a lot of interesting things to say. We have a lot of interesting feedback as well from our listeners, mm-hmm. so I'm excited to hear what they have to say as well. I think everybody had some opinions. Nice. On this. So without further ado, because, you know, I feel like we're going to start talking about our points too much if we keep talking about it. Without further ado, I'm excited to jump into the finale discussion here. So, yeah. Paik, if you want to go ahead and get us started with your number 5, please.
All right. And as always with this show, it's hard to like get 5 really good solid points.
But it's a challenge.
But I think it did it. I always kind of just start with like a small little thing, but my number 5 is the sisters. Again, just kind of the dynamic between Lisey, Darlie, Amanda, and kind of what we see between them. We don't get a whole lot, but what we do get, I really enjoyed. You know, Amanda knowing that when Lisey has left with Dooley, you know, Darla, when is she coming back? It's like, well, she might not come back. There's that, you know, Amanda's very sure, like, knows, like, this might not be it. And Darla's, like, freaking out.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's a tense moment. But, of course, with Joan Allen and Jennifer Jason Leigh, like, they find a way to still kind of make you laugh a little bit and have a little bit of lightheartedness in it while it stays tense, you know, with the whole, so don't freak out. Dolly's like, I'm already freaking out.
and really, who could blame her? I mean, right. You know, we already know she has a hard time accepting this whole, like, I don't know, not really alternate reality. I'm just, this place, this Booyah Moon, right? So yeah, of course she's, you know, troubled mm-hmm. by it. So
yeah. And Amanda just being so like nonchalant, but also like downer about it. Like, oh yeah, she might not come back. And Darla having that line is like, you know, I liked it better when you were in a catatonic state. She's like, that is a really shitty thing to say.
It was, but it was a funny line. It was a really funny line. Yeah. So, yeah.
So, I agree. I liked that. And then, of course, when Lisey does come back the first time, you know, she comes back, she takes some time to heal herself after what happens.
Mm-hmm.
And then she comes back and it's very much just like, all right, you guys were never here. Y'all leave. And, you know, we'll take care of stuff. I don't think they ever knew the other things that happened with the body of Dooley. I don't think they ever were let in on that. I'm not sure.
Probably best that they don't know. I feel the more you don't know, the more you have to like either worry about lying or denying. You got plausible deniability if you don't know. So
if you don't know anything.
Yep.
I don't think Lisey's going to be telling them, oh yeah, by the way, the body came back up, you know, over their blueberry pie. She's going to be like, oh yeah, this. She's probably just going to leave things where they lie.
Exactly. Move on. But, forget it even happened. Mm-hmm.
Then I love that when she goes back the second time and all of that, she, you know, she leaves the message for Darla and is like, I have to go. I have to leave again.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll, you know, I can't promise I'll come back, but I will try.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't want you to freak out, but you probably already are. She knows her sister well.
Yeah.
But then I love when she does come back from that second trip, that they've been waiting there for her all day. Yeah. They stuck there together to wait for their sister to return. And I thought that was really beautiful too, that even though it's a great depiction of a sibling dynamic where they love to give each other shit. They're on each other's nerves all the time, but at the end of the day, they love each other deeply and they're there for each other when they need each other.
Absolutely.
So I love that. And then the flashback of them as kids, because then Lisey gets to actually see what Amanda was seeing with the Hollyhocks. And I thought that was really cool. And then we get the flashback of them playing as kids with their dad kind of videotaping them playing as pirates on the Hollyhocks. And that was really cool. And also, holy crap, with the casting on that, you know, I've talked about casting younger versions of the characters before. You know, I thought, you know, Sebastian Hansen made a really great young Scott. But, and, you know, I looked up on IMDb for these names, by the way. But, yeah, but I was like, man, Claire Keane was a little girl that portrayed young Lisey in that flashback. I was like, if she was not a dead ringer for Julianne Moore.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I was like, was there some kind of digital alteration to make her more Julianne Moore like, or because it was that uncanny. I was like, man, that is bravo.
You were right. Outstanding casting. Yeah. I thought the same.
But yeah, so that's my number five, is just that sister dynamic that I'm glad we got to see even more of that. Cause I've enjoyed it. I know you have too. We've talked about their, you know, communication and the way that they work with each other this whole series. And so had to touch on it one more time and give it some props.
Yeah, I'm glad you did, because I agree with everything that you said. And I loved throughout the series watching that sisterly bond. And, you know, we've said it a few times, you know, the chemistry between the three women, you know, actors, you know, you could totally buy that they were just really sisters. You know, I don't know if it was natural between them, if they, you know, hung out pre-production and also during maybe filming and production, and that helped build, you know, that relationship, or maybe it just came naturally. I don't know, but it was really great. And I think really just important to the series. And I really think that, you know, where we left it, it's going to really help those sisters get to a healing place. I mean,
yeah,
I think they're still going to be sisters. They're still going to bicker. They're still going to poke at each other. And, you know, they know the right buttons to hit, right? To really get to each other like sisters do. Nobody, I think, can get to you like a sister. I don't have a sister. I have brothers. So, and well, I'm not going to go into my whole family dynamic because it's a mess. We're a whole blended family. But, you know, I didn't have sisters. So, you know, but from what I have, you know, observed in my life of friends who've had sisters, or just sisters in, you know, in life, that this seems very real of a sisterly and sibling type relationship that nobody can quite get to you like your sibling can. And, you know, like you said, at the end of the day, you know, as much as what they bicker and they kind of, you know, say some sharp, mean things to each other, sometimes like the whole, I like you better when you're in a catatonic state.
Yeah.
It was funny, but I was like, ooh, that kind of hits below the belt. At the end of the day, there's still love between them, you know, and that you could feel that, you know, you didn't have to look too hard to see that. So
yeah,
really great relationship. And I really think that's going to be a good place where they left off to kind of move on and kind of heal a little bit after everything that they've been through. And I really hope the best for Amanda too, that, you know, she doesn't get lost again, you know, and, you know, she doesn't have, you know, another episode or anything where she is gone, you know, and that she can also heal herself.
Yeah. I was worried for a second there when she, you know, when Lisey is gone with Dooley at the beginning, kind of glossed over that, though, that she does have that moment where it reminded me of when she was trapped in Booyah Moon calling out to Lisey. But she's kind of in the normal world calling out to Lisey, and then she kind of stops and stares off.
Yeah.
And I was really scared for a second that she was going to, like, go to Booyah Moon after Lisey.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I was waiting to see what happened. It didn't, thank God.
Yeah, I was a little worried too that she might slip backwards. So it was good. And I think Amanda's concern for Lisey being gone, that, yeah, I mean, they said that the pool was very captivating and very easy to kind of get lost there. And I mean, Scott was there. So, yeah. I mean, I don't know. I know that he's not alive, but, you know, I think that when you're, you know, if you put yourself in Lisey's shoes and she's grieving for her husband, you know, you would almost think that that would draw her to want to be there too. Scott's there. Yeah. She's seen him there. Not only is Booyah Moon captivating place to be, but also, you know, she could be there with Scott. So,
yep.
I think there is a risk there, and she was right to be worried. So, yeah, that all made sense to me. I like it. That was a good number five. Gotta love those sisters.
Yeah.
Gonna miss them. Well, I want to talk about, for my number five, the demise of Dooley.
All right.
So we, you know, did finally get to see him meet his end, and it was by the Long Boy. Mm-hmm. And I think that it was kind of ironic that he became a part of the place that inspired, saved, and I think in the end destroyed his favorite author.
Yeah.
I thought that was kind of interesting. And this is really wrong and twisted of me, I know, but it was oddly satisfying to have Dooley just completely ripped apart, you know, about like what the Long Boy did to him, you know, how it grabs him and kind of, he just kind of envelops and becomes a part of the Long Boy, like all of those other bodies that are a part of him. And I'm going to talk more about him specifically on my next point, but just Dooley specifically, you know, I think it was totally deserved. But then I did have an issue with Lisey having to deal with the dead body later in her pool. Like, what was the point of taking him to Booyah Moon? That she now has a dead body to deal with. Wasn't that the whole point of taking him to Booyah Moon, was to like dispose of him there, and like he would never be found, or, you know, nobody's ever going to come across his body. Like, nobody's going to get there, right? That was
why. Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. So then I was like, I wonder why the body appeared in the pool all eviscerated.
It wasn't pretty. But yeah, I mean, I'm like, well, what was the point? I mean, that was why I feel like Scott, as a little kid, took Paul to Booyah Moon.
Yeah.
Because if they got caught with Paul's dead body, I mean, his dad was definitely going to go to jail and, you know, be charged with murder. So in order to hide that secret, he took him to Booyah Moon. And then in the, and we'll talk about the end and how they kind of explained that a little bit, but I don't know. I'm like, well, what was the point? And now we've got a mess to clean up, or at least she has a mess to clean up. I would have been pissed. I would have been like, dude, that is why I took you there.
Right.
Why are you back over here? So yeah, but I mean, it sounds like she's going to kind of get away with it. You know, she had this like wink, wink conversation.
I loved that so much.
Yeah.
I was just like, this grin on my face. Cause at first I was kind of worried about it because Chief Richards was, you know, just the way he was talking, like you could tell like he was kind of on to like, maybe something happened. Cause like, well, you found the officer, but we know Dooley's like such a just devoted, like he wouldn't just get spooked and run off. So he was just like, so, you know, what would have happened? And then I love then how the chief just kind of, slides out. He's like, but, you know, the officer that he killed was a really great guy. And the fact that he killed him the way he did, he's like, if something was to happen to Dooley, I wouldn't lose any sleep over it. And Lacey's like, yeah, me neither. I love that. She's like, you know, it's like, so maybe somebody will find the body if he's dead. And she's like, I don't think they will. I love that. Is there something you're not telling me? Yeah.
Yep.
She just like all but admits to Richards that she killed him. And his response is just, well, go on and get your pie. Enjoy it. Have a good time with your sisters.
Yep. So, yeah, I don't think they're going to be looking too hard.
No.
For him. So we don't have to worry about that, I guess. But yeah, it was a fun little conversation, little wink, wink, nod, nod. I feel like you know more than what you're telling me, and I'm not going to ask you because then I have to do something about it. And yeah, I don't think anyone's really going to be missing Jim Dooley or reporting him missing or anything like that. But yeah, so we got to see his end, and I think it was an appropriate end, based on the type of person that we saw him to be.
Brutal though, still brutal. Like very brutal. Like I was like, almost makes me want to feel kind of sorry for him. Almost, but not.
Almost, but not. No, because I kept thinking when I started to think about, ooh, damn, you know, about how brutal it was as we're watching it, I kept getting flashbacks of what he did to Lisi.
Yeah.
And how absolute brutal and cruel he was.
Yeah.
And had like zero concern for, you know, he didn't really, he himself and his whole perspective was so twisted. You know, he only cared about, you know, Scott's work, you know, for himself, and he was more selfish minded. He cared for nothing else. So I don't know. He was just too twisted for this world. So I think he got what he deserved. It was brutal, but I kept thinking every time I would see something happen to him, I would get a flashback of what he did to Lisi and how brutal he was with her. And I was like, nope, he got it. He needed that. So, so jumping straight into that.
No sympathy, really. Yeah. He got what he deserved.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's
then I just feel bad for Lisi. Yeah. Having to clean up this mess after she took care of that.
I know. I was just
she handled it really well though. It's just, well, we'll just load it up in a blanket and take it to the bridge and dump him over the side, body part by body part. Glad nobody's going to like drive up on her during that. Cause
yeah, no kidding.
That'd be a tough one to explain.
A little bit. Yeah. She handled it well. It looked like it hadn't been her first day getting rid of a body. Cause I thought I'd be freaking out. Like, what the hell are you doing here? You know, you're supposed to be over there. But, so yeah, that's my number five.
Nice.
What is your number four?
My number four is Scott letting go. ... you know, just Scott's kind of end in his own. Now, someone mentioned in the feedback last week the waxy look over Scott's face, and I didn't notice it last week, but definitely did this episode for sure. And I was wondering, you know, because at the beginning, I'm like, what is going on? But then we do find out after Lisi is talking to Amanda, you know, she goes to her, tell me about the Shrouded Ones. I need to know. And it is people who have died. And this is, you know, I'm reading between the lines of what Amanda said, but what I assume here is, yeah, the people, and I think I had mentioned this as kind of a theory in an earlier episode, that people who frequented Booyah Moon, who pulled from its power and its source, then when they actually do die, there's still some of them that's left there, and that's what the Shrouded Ones are. And so that explains why Scott has been there this whole time. I mean, that is his connection to that place after he died. He's going to be there. Mm-hmm. And the Shrouded Ones, I guess, are the ones who decide to stay and, as Amanda put it, hold on a little bit longer for whatever. It's like an unfinished business thing.
Yeah.
And his unfinished business, the reason he's a Shrouded One, or, you know, he's becoming one and sitting there at the edge of the pool, is he wanted to make sure that Lisi got through this final bull hunt, that Amanda was taken care of, and that Lisi, you know, remembered the things that he wanted her to remember. And now that all of that has happened, you know, he's been waiting for this moment. It's kind of his time to go for good now.
Yeah.
It's that unfinished business taken care of, and now it's time for him to go. And I'm glad that Lisi had the thought to go back to the pool one last time and see him one more time as he was kind of heading off into the water for good. It was really brief, but it meant enough to both of them, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the whole flashback montage of the two of them during that scene with the music and just reliving all of their, like, you know, great moments with each other. Oh, watching that was like, there's been some really deep emotional moments throughout this whole show, but this might be the first time I've really like cried watching this show.
Yeah.
This one hit me and I'm just, it's like, it was absolutely beautiful. I
agree.
I thought it was really well done. Just seeing, this montage flashback of reliving all their great moments together as they say goodbye to each other in not a lot of words, but really just in looks and like a shared knowing of each other's love for each other. And yeah, I thought it was beautiful. And then the reason I have the question mark at the end of that is because, of course, this show would, and I should have seen it coming, at the very end, basically, we get one more time with the freaking lighthouse. Because it's gotta drive me crazy with, like, quick thoughts. As, like, the credits are starting to roll, everything's going through my head. It's like, wait, was the lighthouse not Scott? Or was it still Scott? But what does that mean? Is he still somewhere watching? And we're never gonna know because it's over now. Like, what is... Thanks for that.
I know. Yeah. I feel like it would be like a typical Stephen King ending, and it's just open for interpretation. I don't think we're going to get a season two or anything like that. I feel like this was just a limited series. It was just the book.
Yeah.
He's only got, you know, just the one book as source material. I really don't see it going anywhere, you know, further. I'm pretty sure this was a one and done type of thing. But yeah, they had to kind of leave it a little open-ended there, make us crazy,
of course,
a little bit. Wouldn't be Stephen King if they didn't. So I like that. That's a really good point. And a lot of beautiful moments there. I'm of the same mind. It was really touching, and it really moved me to see you know, some of those special moments between the two, and I really got their connection. I wish there had been a little bit more character development between the two, maybe getting a little bit more of their lives together and not so much of the just in flashbacks or after his death. But I did feel that. I felt those two had a connection, and, you know, I could feel that resonating for sure.
Yeah.
And it was nice. It moved me to tears, too. Good number four. My number four, I want to talk a little bit more about the Long Boy. Just, I don't have that much to say because I still don't know that much about him. I don't still understand. And I don't think we're probably going to. I do wish I had a little bit more, or we were provided maybe a little bit more insight into at least the idea of what it represented or what it was made up of. I mean, we got a pretty good, clear picture and close-ups of the Long Boy. And I did enjoy those close-ups. Yeah. I mean, talk about some great work, right, on the CGI. Oh,
yeah. Every time it was like a really long, close shot on it, I was like, man, that thing will never stop being the most terrifying thing imaginable up close.
Yeah, I'm afraid I'm going to see that in my dreams, or maybe nightmares more specifically. But but the close-ups that we got were really great. They did not shy away from, you know, like those bodies that are crawling and moving, you know, all over the plate, or they're moving and crawling all over, but they're somehow held in place. So I thought that was really cool effects. It was cool effects when Jim Dooley kind of got absorbed into and the other, I guess, people. I'm going to call them people. That's what they look like. You know, were kind of ripping at him, and, you know, you could tell he's, you know, being tortured and in pain. But I still don't understand what he represented or and why was Lisey spared?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I still don't get that connection. Like, why it didn't seem to discriminate on who it would go after. So I was curious as to why Lisey is, you know, as she's standing there and she gives Dooley that injection, and why it goes after him. So I don't know, but we've talked about him before. Curious about, like, you know, what does he represent? What is it? Is it manifested from something there in Booyah Moon, the people who visit there, or, you know, the things that they bring there? Is that what manifests him? I don't know, but
yeah,
still a mystery. One of the unanswered questions, unfortunately, I think.
Yeah. Still don't know a whole lot about him, but it was interesting. I was like, well, who'd have thought that all you needed to do was just calmly and quietly ask the Long Boy to let you through?
Ask and you shall receive. Maybe he just wanted to be asked nicely for something.
Yeah. So, and I did wonder, I was like, what compelled her to think that that would work? Because, I mean, she said she might not come back, so clearly she wasn't 100% sure that it would work, but she seemed confident enough to go for it. And yeah, she gives the shovel as kind of like a payment to it. Like, it's kind of letting go of those things.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was really interesting. She just wanted to see Scott. Yeah. One more time. And then Longbow, LB obliges. LB, you know, we're close like that now. Right. I can call him that. So
yeah. He's your homie. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I just thought that was one of the mysteries that we didn't quite get an answer to, which, I mean, it's fine, but it just, it really just kind of stands out. I wish I'd had a little bit more, maybe not a full answer, but just a little bit more of a, you know, at least a hint or something. But I don't think we got any of that. And if we did, I totally missed it. And it's fine. I knew we'd probably have some unanswered questions or mysteries left over.
Yeah.
I feel like, you know, there were other things that were more important that we needed. And I was fine with that, but just still kind of just stuck like, what the hell is that thing already? Especially after we got those close-ups of it. And then Wyatt let Lisi go and seemed to be okay with letting her pass, you know, there at the end to go see Scott. So anyway, that's my number four. What is your number three?
All right. Well, I feel like I don't get to do this very often to turn the tables on you, because it ends up usually you having to say this to me, but we already covered my number three because it was, you know, Jim Dooley's demise and what happened to him. So we're good. So we can.
Well,
we got all my notes on that.
Tables have turned.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you don't have anything additional that you want to add? You feel like you've said what
you
want?
I think we, I got through all of my stuff with it too. Yeah.
Okay. Well, then I'll move on to my number three.
All right.
I'll just another quick little mention about how here at the end, Lisi finally does give up Scott's papers to the University of Maine. And there was a really nice scene there where one of the girls that was, I guess, taking the inventory and, you know, taking ownership of those papers, where she expresses empathy.
Yeah.
For Scott and what happened to Lisi, instead of like where Jim Dooley felt he had ownership, right, of Scott's work. But this person was like, you know, hey, I read Scott's books. I read Relics 5 times. He really helped me through an important time in my life. I'm so sorry for your loss, you know?
Yeah.
And Jim Dooley, on the other hand, you know, it was always his loss, not Lisi's. And there was the difference there. And that's why I didn't feel as bad, you know,
For him. And maybe that's, the question we had about like, well, why does she hold on to these things? Why doesn't she want to let go? Maybe it's because Dashmeel's really the only one who was like pestering her about giving it to it. Mm-hmm. And Dashmeel was a lot like Dooley, where it was very, the world needs this and it's your, you know, you should, your obligation to let this go because we deserve it. And she already didn't like Dashmeel because he took credit for saving Scott back at that.
Right.
So there was, maybe that's really what it was. And all it took was her finding this other university on her own and realizing like, oh, these are people who actually have sympathy and understanding for the situation. And maybe part of it was also just her like giving that final dig to Dooley, even though he's dead, but then also into Dashmeel. Like, what a slap in the face that after all of this, she then does give it to somebody else, a different university.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a nice little, you know, I think pin in it. And
yeah,
I liked that. I think that really helped Lisi that, you know, it wasn't so much about, you know, just a little empathy for her. I mean, she lost her husband, her partner, you know, clearly they had a very close relationship and no one seemed to think about, here's a woman who's lost her husband of, you know, 20 something years, you know, and have any sympathy for her and her loss. It's all about, it's our loss because we lost Scott. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you and I have talked about, you know, kind of similar feelings and how, you know, you feel like you have some kind of ownership to an artist's work, but it's really a little bit more, you know, a little bit more, I think, a broader perspective, not just what it means to you, You know, it's not about you. So I liked that scene. I liked that she got that. And I saw that the University of Maine, that said that they, it was going to the Fogler. And what that really means is the Raymond H. Fogler Library in Orono, Maine. And I'm probably butchering that. So apologies to anyone from Maine. Don't at me. I apologize. But it made me think that there's probably a lot of Stephen King in that library. So
probably
that I thought
Daphne would
cool.
know.
Daphne might know.
I just assume she would.
Yeah. So, yeah, anybody who's from Maine or has visited that library would love to hear if there is, you know, some Stephen King items that maybe aren't available to the general public. But yeah, it was cool that that's a real place. And I bet, like I said, there's probably some stuff from the King himself. Anyway, just a little note there. What is your number two?
All right, my number two is The Final Bull.
Ah.
And the final prize of the bull hunt that Scott has Lacey on.
That's mine too. We're going to be right in sync.
All right, awesome. I bet we have the same number one too.
We might.
I have a feeling. But yeah, the final prize is Lacey then realizes to follow the string from Paul's grave. And when she does that, yeah, there's like this golden, like not really suitcase, but like chest, but it's more like a case. I don't know exactly what to call it. It was kind of cool.
A makeshift treasure chest.
Yeah. But it had like a soda. I couldn't see an RC label on it, but I assume that was kind of his and Paul thing. So I would believe that it was. But yeah, there's a soda in there, some little callbacks, but then also Lacey's story that Amanda said that Scott had mentioned to her, and it's this final thing that he wrote before he died for her, and it tells the true story of what happened to him as a kid, which I won't get into now because that is my number one. but yeah, so he's able to kind of tell this story, and which maybe this is more your number two is that backstory, I don't know, but it tells this really dark story, and it's the first time he's let this out to anyone, it seems. He's finally getting it off of his chest, so it's being able to give that, you know, lift that, you know, weight off of him. But then with that, it helps Lacey kind of move on through this. Like, okay, you have all of me. There's nothing else that you have to wonder about. The things that I always held back, now I'm letting you know, and then I can move on, you can move on.
Yeah.
And yeah, I thought that was really cool. You know, the true prize of the bull ends up being what Lacey said way earlier in the season, was she made that comment, you know, my prize is learning how to be alone.
Yeah.
And it kind of is that. It's not as sad of a version of that, but it's now more of her prize is learning that it's okay for her to be alone.
Yeah, you're right. And to let go, I think, too.
Yeah, yeah. That she can, yeah, like, she can let go, she can move on, because, you know, Scott still is there with her in some regard, but she's able to, yeah, have her own life and move on with things. So, yeah, I thought that was really cool.
I think so, too. I think it was a gift that she can, she's always going to grieve. I don't want to make it sound like she's just, I'm done with grieving, but it sounds like she's been through a hellish 2 years since Scott died, that she has not been able to get through the grieving process. It seems like she was kind of stuck, you know, in the grieving process. And, you know, while she will probably always grieve, she will always miss Scott, you know, being in her life. I think that this enabled her to get through the grieving process and be able to move on, so she can, you know, she's still going to remember him and, you know, miss him, but she's not going to be stuck in this like hellish version of grieving that we saw when we met her. And she's going to like have her own story now. And I think that's, you know, kind of what the point of what some of that was.
Yeah.
And that was his gift to her from the bull hunt, in essence. I agree. I like it. Well, that kind of went on. That was definitely tied to my number two as well. I'm sorry, did you have...
Cool.
Were you done?
No, that was all I had.
That definitely tied into it, but the specific of what he told her in the story as far as what happened, and maybe that's what your number one is. Maybe that's... we're going to crisscross a little bit.
It's all right.
but like when, you know, we finally get to find out what happened to Scott's father. I think we kind of knew that he had died, but we didn't really get to have any detail from that. And we're guided through what happened there with Scott and his father's final hours together. And we learned it really wasn't a very long time after what happened with Paul, you know, you know, how everything came to pass. And I got to give props again to Michael Pitt, who played Andrew Landon. This dude got some chops. He did a really outstanding job. He was definitely a standout for me in the series, and that surprised me because he really made an impact. You know, when he expresses his inability to kill himself, you know, in the way he whispers to Scott, he says, "I'm so sorry." And then, and even just with the way when Scott drags his corpse across the mud, I mean, it's so traumatizing. I mean, just when you think that what we knew so far about what happened to Scott in his childhood can't get any worse with, you know, it seemed to be an abusive home. You know, we still don't understand fully about his dad. Was he mentally ill? Was he just abusive? Was it a combination of both? You know, we don't know the details of that, but it was not a great home life. So that was already terrible. And then, oh, he killed his older brother, and Scott had to hide the body and bury it. Okay, so we think that's the worst thing that's going to, that's going to be it.
Right.
And then we find out that Scott, because his father couldn't end it for himself, asked his son to. And to see Scott as this little boy, you know, disposing of his dad, and how he tried to take him to Booyah Moon the same way he did with Paul, because that's what he wanted, and he couldn't do it, and then has to go to like social services and, you know, say, well, they just ran off and left me. Just the whole weight of that, of what Scott and his father went through during those final days was just unbearable, And, you know, it can't imagine somebody actually going through something like that. So I'm glad that we got the rest of that story. And I think it was, you know, like you said, important for Scott to relay that. Like, now you know everything. There are no more unanswered questions, you know, and it's all laid out there. And that was the time to do it after he was gone. So she she would be able to kind of move on and have all of that, have that knowledge. So just heartbreaking moments, really great acting. And I think it was good to hear, get the story. I think it kind of wraps that up nicely.
Yeah.
So that's my number two.
All right. Awesome.
And so was that also part of your number one? What's your
number one? Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
My number one, I just call it the true story of Scott Landon. And so, you mentioned a lot of it. Yeah. After Paul's death. Yeah. It hasn't been that long, and their father is not holding up well. I don't think I'd say he was holding up very well to begin with, even before then. But I mean, now he's like hearing sounds and like seeing visions of Paul, like haunting him. And he's like hurting, like cutting himself and stuff more and more. And he's just like falling deeper inside that hole he's been in, to where he stopped going to work. He's just shut off from everything. And then we get the moldy sandwich scene, which was,
that was rough.
It was really rough. But then it was weird because like he makes Scott, forces Scott to take a bite and swallow it, but then like follows that up with, "But I'm never going to hurt you again."
Yeah.
And I guess he kind of means it. I mean, at least physically. Mm-hmm. He doesn't touch Scott anymore after that, really.
Yeah.
But, I mean, mentally, he does some damage for sure. Still, but yeah, it was a really, really weird, like, it was a rough scene, but then it had interesting implications to it. And then we get the scene with Frank from the mill, who shows up to check on Andrew and see, you know, where he's been and what's going on. And that was really intense.
How the hell was he so quiet?
I know, he is, like...
I mean, for a drunk
unnaturally
guy,
he's very, quiet and he's sneaky.
Very stealthy for a drunk person.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Somehow got, like, outside and then, like, through the woods around behind him to hold a gun to the back of his head. And then when he realizes the guy is going to just, like, be okay with the story that Scott told him and leave, he just, like, sneaks back through the woods and then is back in the house when Scott turns around.
And, like,
man,
and
ninja.
That, and I don't know, wouldn't you kind of feel someone back there?
Right.
Kind of lingering. I mean, don't you almost kind of feel like the hair raise up on your neck, or is it just me? I don't know.
Yeah,
but I feel
that's
like,
what I was thinking too.
I don't know. I feel like I'm being washed or something, you know, and then you turn around. And so, I mean, and unless this guy was just completely inept or, you know, so focused on Scott or something, you know, and thinking, here's this little kid who's fending for himself, you know, and maybe that's all he was focused on. But I just thought, man, it's weird. He doesn't sense his presence at all behind him.
Right. It was weird. But this scene did show me, I was like, yeah, it's no wonder Scott ended up growing up to be one of the world's most famous fiction writers. Because even at that young age, he's whipping up quite the compelling story.
Sure did.
He's like, oh, yeah. He's like, where's my dad? Oh, he had to go visit my aunt, his sister, she has Lou Gehrig's disease and she's not doing so well and she's breathing like this and she can't walk that much anymore. So, well, who's taking care of you and your brother? Oh, you know, the lady from down the street comes in and checks on us, but we're doing really good. Like, he's just like on the fly coming up with these things.
I'm totally believable.
I'm impressed.
Yeah. It flowed naturally. Like, he wasn't stumbling or hesitating to, like, you know, like, come up with the story. It sounded like it could have been truthful. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Good storyteller.
Yep, So that, yep, it makes sense that he became, a very prolific author. Because he's good at that. And we see a lot, as a kid there, like, he's sitting around in those scenes, like, just reading fiction stories and stuff. Like, he's taking so much of that in also.
Yep.
So I thought those little nods were really cool. But then, the big thing, which you talked a lot about, was like the death of Andrew. Oof. And it's the most disturbing bull hunt of all.
Mm-hmm.
Is he sends him on like these little, you know, which shows that the dad was paying attention when Paul was sending Scott on these bull hunts.
Because you wouldn't think he would.
Because like he would use some of the same kind of clues because he knew where, you know, oh, if I say this clue, then Scott knows to go to this place and this place. Like, he had been paying attention, which was interesting.
I almost wonder if it was something that he used to do with Paul when Paul was younger. And is that where Paul got the idea? Maybe it wasn't original. And it could have been. I don't know that. But just makes me curious because he did know so much about it.
Yeah. But, you know, if we get a really cool, like an interesting, nice prize of a final bull hunt being, you know, being able to let go and move on with life with Lacey, this is the most disturbing final prize of a bull hunt where you win getting to kill your father. It's
messed up.
Yeah, but Andrew couldn't kill himself. I mean, he tried.
Yeah.
He had the shotgun, and then that wasn't going to work. He just, like, got plaster drunk. I mean, just chugged an entire bottle, I guess, of, like, I don't know if it was vodka or just, like, some moonshine, some kind of something.
Mm-hmm. White liquor.
But, I mean, and, yeah, just, like, plasters that, you know, just completely just like pass out on the couch, and then with a note, that final like little note of like, you have to kill me, please. And it's, I mean, he's just haunted and so taken over by everything that happened with Paul that he can't go on, and he can't do it himself, so he puts it into Scott's hands, which is just, you know, sad, really, really sad. But I was surprised how easily Scott just like did it. I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yes, daddy. Like, that's what I, okay, you say so. And then for some reason, they don't really touch on it or, you know, specify why, but he can't take his dad's body to Buyeon-myun and bury it like he did with Paul's.
Yeah. And
he tries. He just can't.
Yeah. And we don't have an explanation as to why, but maybe he just didn't belong there. I don't know.
Yeah. Weird. Yeah. So like you say, so he dumps it in the well and then heads off to, you know, social services and they take him from there.
Yeesh. Yeah. Yeah. Disturbing childhood to say the least. How you can cope and try to like grow up to be a normal person or semi-normal functional human being, you know, after all of that is nothing short of amazing, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we still don't really understand fully what it was that was wrong with Paul either. You know, that was never, that was another like question that, you know, was he slowly infected by something when they were going to Buyeon-myun? Was it like the infection from the long boy that finally got him? Was it a slow descent into like a mental illness? I mean,
yeah,
we don't know. We don't know.
I don't know.
Wow. That was a really good number one. My number one, we've touched on it some already, but it was kind of related to the bull hunt. And I mean the entire bull hunt, not just where it ended, but, you know, the entire bull hunt to kind of where I think Scott was doing it to for Lisey to help her save Amanda. I think that's kind of where we got a little bit, and also helping prepare her in case someone like Cole came after her. And I think that the whole ending that we got really does wrap up Scott's story. Like now that she knows what has happened, she can go on and write her own, you know, there's no more secrets, no more dark past. We get that beautiful montage that you mentioned earlier, between her and Scott. Before she picks up that shovel one more time and giving it to the long boy, how he lets her pass and how she's able to see him even more shrouded. He's now kind of become one of those shrouded ones. And he's also now ready to move into the water. It's almost like he was hanging around to kind of help. Because I think Amanda mentioned it, like Scott guided you along the way or the whole way or something like that. And she said, yeah. And I think that he was trying to stick around in his own way until this unfinished business was done, that, you know, she was able to help Amanda. She had what she needed. She was able to fight Dooley. And now that she knows, now that that is done and she now knows all of his story, this releases her. And I think that's, you know, kind of, you know, calling it Lisey's story. Now that's what that next chapter is going to be, or this new book is going to be. It's going to be Lisey's story, this new book or chapter in her life. You know, she can kind of move past being a part of like Scott's story and it being about Scott. Now it's about her. And I think that was, you know, represented in a really great way and how she can let go, kind of move on through her grieving and then be with her sisters, be with her family. So I think it was a satisfying ending for me. There were still questions. There's still some things we don't know or understand, but I think that for me, it wrapped it up, I think, nicely.
Yeah.
And I thought it was a beautiful way to do
it. I'm satisfied with where
it I'm satisfied ended, for with sure. it. So that's where I wanted to kind of leave. It was just, I feel satisfied with where it ended. I think it was, you know, beautiful and tragic. And of course, left us with a little bit of an open-ended kind of question, which is pretty typical Stephen King. I don't know that there's too many things that he wholly wraps up. But yeah, I thought it was great. And I was pretty happy, you know, with it as a whole. There were some flaws throughout the series. There were some things that weren't perfect, but I think overall, I'm glad that I watched it. Did you have general thoughts about the series as a whole that you want to mention, or about how you said you were satisfied with it?
Yeah, that's really I can really just kind of echo a lot of what you said. Where, I mean, there's definitely some things that I think are still a little confusing, or, you know, plot wise, you're like, well, you know, they you know, skipped over some things here or there and didn't really explain it much just to kind of move on with the story. And so not everything's not like perfectly wrapped up in a bow, but overall, like that main story element of like Scott and Lacey and, you know, what he wanted for her and kind of where she's at the end of this. Yeah. I just summed that up with, yeah, very satisfied with the way that that ends, as I think it is a pretty solid ending.
Good. That makes me happy. Mm-hmm. Did you have any notes? Anything to add?
Not really. Just one that I thought, like, just maybe get your thought on is I took a note of the quote right at the very opening of the episode, the Oscar Wilde quote, where they open the episode with a flower blossoms for its own joy. And just to see if maybe you had an idea of kind of how that ties in exactly. Because it's very vague.
It is. And I don't have it in front of me. I should have pulled it. I think it's from one of his, and I might be incorrect. I thought it was from one of his poems, and there was more context to it than that. No, I'm sure it ties in and has something to do, at least my interpretation of it anyway, has something to do with Lacey and where we ended the story and how she's kind of finally blooming into her own. Like she's been so, it's been all about Scott and his world. I mean, I know they were partners and such, but you know, that's what people focused on was Scott and his work. And he's this famous writer, novelist, and everyone just kind of looked at her as the wife. I think she didn't really ever get anything of her own. And I think that maybe this has something to do with this next chapter in her life, you know, that now she would be blooming, and it would be for herself. But
yeah,
that's,
I agree. Where I was coming from on it is, yeah, that's what I was thinking is, yeah, her own joy, not caught up in the life and successes of Scott, but now being able to kind of move towards living her own life again.
Yeah.
And yeah, blossoming on her own based off of her own life and her own joys and own successes.
Yeah. And not that that takes away from anything that they shared, you know, or that it wasn't a good thing, but I mean, he's dead. So she needs to move on and have her own life and not it just be about Scott and his stories. It's got to be now her story.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, I thought that was a nice little quote as well. The one note that I had, just it really touched me and really, I think it really kind of broke me, was when Scott says, "Stories were all I had, but now I have you. You're every story. Mm. You're my heart, kiddo. This is our time now. You and me. We should make our own world." I just thought that was just like one of the most beautiful things I'd ever heard. And I think Clive Owen's delivery, you know, I think is a little bit underappreciated in this series. And I just thought that was beautiful. And that broke me. I was like, oh shit, here come the waterworks. So thought that was really beautiful. And I really wanted to call attention to that, that line that he had. Thought that was great. Well, this was, it's been a great ride. I'm glad we covered this one.
Yeah, me too.
All right. Well, that is going to take us into our listener feedback portion. So we definitely had a lot of thoughts from all of you lovely listeners. There are a couple long ones in here. So I hope you guys stick with this. We're going to include all of it. I didn't cut anything out. So we've got some long emails and some long voicemails as well. So I hope you guys stick around for all of that. But I'll go ahead and take this first one. This first one is from our good friend Lindsay Schlicht. She says, "I'm not going to lie. This one was a bummer of an ending for me. The special effects of the long boy were great, and I, of course, loved watching Dooley meet his doom. Not sure I understand why his mangled body was returned. I'd be pissed if I did all that just to have to dispose of the body anyway." I would too. I'm with you. She goes on, "After that, it felt like long, melancholy stretches of nothingness to cover the fact that we weren't going to get much resolved beyond what he did to his father. I swear every time I thought this must be the final scene, another one would pop up. I was definitely ready for it to be over by the time it finally ended. Perhaps I'm not artsy-fartsy enough to understand the deeper metaphors. Seems to me like this is another one of King's works that just didn't translate as well into film. All in all, not my favorite show, but an entertaining WTF season of TV for me. I enjoyed the podcast more than the show, which just happens sometimes. Thanks. She says, see you for Sweet Tooth, another one I hadn't planned to watch, but you convinced me. Ooh, oh, nice. Thanks. I get it. There were, I think, a couple of spots that they probably could have stopped it there in the episode and it would have been fine. Like, you could have ended it just right there and like, oh, no, wait, we got one more scene. And then, okay, now we can probably stop it. And then it would be good. And then we'd still get more. So I agree with you there. We probably could have ended it a couple of different times, but I think that I was okay with more of the content that we got. I thought, for me anyway, it was satisfying. But I get you, Lindsay. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate that you were here with us for the 8 episode journey. We really appreciate
Thanks
hearing
for
what you said.
Around.
Yeah.
All right. We got an email from Fran. She says, greetings all. Well, we've reached the end of the story and it's left me with the booyah blues because sad to say, it just didn't do the trick for me. I guess such is the case for these book adaptations, book screenplays that have to encapsulate and tie together so much story into less than 60 minutes of TV. I wonder if others felt the same way. The whole atmosphere, nuance of this episode was just lost in comparison to episode 7. The monster, even seen clearly, wasn't scary anymore, and that operatic music did not mix well with the scene of Dooley's demise by the hands of the monster just didn't flow for me at all. Another fight scene, should have counted on that, but 3 more headbutts, the fingers again, and beam me up, Scotty, really? Let the body parts hit the pool. I found that kind of humorous, so what was that? Booyah telling Lisey, this is your mess, so now you clean it up? Lisey's dumping practices, another scene that should have been more scary, eerie, was it the music? Just didn't flow for me. Rolling river, wouldn't the body parts wash up somewhere eventually? No concern with that? Didn't get it. Why couldn't Dooley's body parts remain with the monster? Was it because Dooley was an outsider? Lisey's story. So, dag, her prize was Scott finally giving her the whole truth, that he killed his father. Okay. But that's all to liberate her and Amanda as he goes on in death so that she could go on in life. Scott's story. Now that whole scene of Scott and his dad was very haunting. Superb acting by Pitt and the kid. Dad was cut all over. Gee, ghastly depiction of his mental illness. The visitor from personnel, good tension to that scene. Scott's a good storyteller. What did he mean when he said he wished his dad had killed the guy? So that his dad could be arrested, put in prison, or killed by police? Why couldn't Dad pull the trigger on himself? What a cowardly, cruel, abusive dad. Dead by axe. I guess the kid had no choice. Just awful, that depiction of patricide. Dad got dragged to hell, literally. Scott's story to the sheriff wouldn't jive with what he told personnel. No consequence of that? Wouldn't that come up in the investigation? Lisey's last request, the shovel, an offering to the Booyah God. I didn't like Scott's enshrouding. It looked too fake. The marriage montage was nice. Some impact there. They could have played that Cornelius Brothers wedding song to the scenes, but I get it, the sweet, somber music. Lisey turned that one pick with Scott down. Why? Just to show a closure for her? A strong woman who now has grief closure should be able to now face memories and photos, don't you think? I would have rather they had Lisey caress the photo or gently touch Scott's face in the photo than turning the photo down. Dag. The lighthouse, the pool, and the sky reflecting in the pool. Life and spirit goes on. So, despite my being somewhat disappointed by the finale, the series as a whole was great, and really it was all that more fun because of joining your podcast, I must say. Thank you so much. I went back and listened to another episode recap of The Stand Season 1, and it just prompted me to go and binge the whole season, and I really dug it, along with the miniseries. Rob Lowe as Nick was a much better performance for me, though. The nuclear explosion was scary as heck. And you guys mentioned Sweet Tooth, so I watched the first episode. It was pretty good, so I may continue on with that. No Oreos this week, I must confess. I was back to Chips Ahoy for me. Can't wait to hear your take on the finale this week. Blessings to you all, Fran in New York. Thank you so much for all that. That was great.
Thank you, Fran. I get it. I think you'll find lots of people probably agree with you with a lot of what you had to say. I read a lot of folks that were more, I think I read more folks that were disappointed than that loved it. But I did hear folks, and not just feedback, but just what I read a little bit online, reading what some people had to say in general with their thoughts. So I don't know, but glad that you enjoyed some of our coverage of The Stand, and hope to see you around for Sweet Tooth.
Yeah.
So thanks. We did also get some feedback from our good friend Wendy Ott Eppers as well that came in just under the radar. Wendy, you just made it. Just finished the finale. I really loved the show. I liked the final juxtaposition of Scott's horrific childhood, where we find out how the story of his dad and Paul ended, versus Lisey's bucolic childhood, where her dad built her an amazing playship for her and her sisters. Ooh, good thoughts there. She goes on, even though this was a graphic horror story, ultimately the show was Scott and Lisey's love story. I agree. I liked it. Glad that you jumped in and binged it and got caught up with this, Wendy, and appreciate your thoughts on that.
Yeah. Really good. All right. This comes from our friend Greg. Always good to hear from him.
Mm-hmm.
He says, in general, I thought the finale was touching, heartwarming, vindicating, heartbreaking, and frustrating. Something that I have noticed with Stephen King's work, even as a longtime fan, is that sometimes monsters just are. Sometimes the fantastic happens without any explanation. I think we've been so spoiled by many well-written shows and books that we need an explanation for everything. Because, as we have seen, it can be done, and it can be done well. Some of the things that we were wondering. What is the Long Boy? No one knows, and we will never find out. Perhaps there are positives to leaving some of these things a mystery, but it makes me want to read the story in order to possibly find out what they are. Given that Amanda mentions that Scott knows a little about Booyamoon, but not nearly everything, makes me think that in the book, there isn't really an answer. Given that Dooley was absorbed by the Long Boy, but his body showed back up in the real world, makes me wonder if that was his soul and his body was matched in the real world. We'll never know. What connection does the lighthouse have to Booyamoon? It's a mirrored anchor between both worlds. It is just something that is reflected from one world to another. Perhaps some modicum of control could be exercised by spirits in Booyamoon, but it's just a thing. At least that's my interpretation. It may have more purpose to it, but I don't think it was explained by anything in the show, which is fine, but the mirroring definitely made you think there was something more to it. Who were the Shrouded Ones? They were the dead who had not moved on. Okay, so Booyamoon is a type of purgatory where spirits pass through on the way to the other side. That's cool. Cool, cool, cool. So now, I'm operating on the theory that it's a purgatory where some people can access and utilize some of its ideas or healing natures, but the draw of the pull makes it so that there is an inherent danger to it. Also, that the people who are able to visit are touched in some way, shape, or form. Whether it be cutting or mental instability or overly creative, the people who can access this fantastical place are also ones who are in the most danger of getting caught in its proverbial tar pit. How did Scott get his ideas or stories from Booyamoon? No one knows. Personally, I'm going with the theory that, effectively by osmosis of being in Booyamoon, he picked up the thoughts of other people who could visit, or the souls who stopped there and gazed at the pool, so he gathered them up and wrote them down and published them for his benefit. So he never shared his own stories, just ones he picked up from other spirits, until he wrote his own and kept it in Booyamoon for Lisey to find. And that was a heart-wrenching series of scenes right there. The kid who played Scott killed it, no pun intended, and his dead face as he was driving the tractor to pull his father to the well was the picture of a well-seasoned actor. Maybe the director told him to pretend he was pulling a stack of lumber. Except he exuded a heaviness in his face, which said he recognized what he'd done out of both duty and pity. Question, did the wand that the deep space cowboy gave Scott, looking like an arm of the Long Boy, act as a talisman to give the Long Boy a sense of where Scott was? So the deep space cowboy went to Booyamoon, saw the Long Boy, carved a wand to look like it, like from relics, I believe, and gave it to Scott? Was it of nefarious purpose, or just coincidental timing that Scott's wounds just started opening at that time? I don't know. Now that I write it, I realize that Scott described the wand and relics as a copy of the Long Boy, and that's why the Deep Space Cowboy carved it that way. There could be a number of other thoughts, like why was Lisey able to approach the Long Boy at the end? Why did the Long Boy accept the shovel? Was the shovel an anchor? Was the lighthouse an anchor? And so many more, but you may have to cut this for time. No, Greg, we will not. Anyway, I'm glad I watched it. I enjoyed it. And while I wish I'd gotten more explanation sometimes, it just isn't in the cards. Look forward to hearing if you guys figured out something else. Greg. P.S. I called it in week 4. I think Dooley goes down via Long Boy.
Yep. You get credit for that, Greg.
Yeah.
That was so great. I knew Greg was going to have some great
really good
insight.
Yeah.
And no, I'm not cutting any of this out. It's the finale, man. And the finale, I leave it in there because I think it's good for everyone to hear and hear everyone's thoughts. And I think a lot of what you had to say, Greg, was really, really great and insightful. So thank you so much for taking the time. to write that out. You might have carpal tunnel now after doing all of that. I'm teasing. And kudos to you, Paik, for getting through both of those emails.
Lots of reading today.
Lots of reading today. No, I love it, though. I love seeing that. I love the engagement. You guys are into it like we are, and you have some thoughts to say, whether they're good or whether they're bad. And I don't care which. I just love the engagement from our listeners. So that was really great. Thank you guys so much for putting all that thought into it. We do have a couple of phone calls this week as well. Now, our good friend Daphne, who has been so great the last couple of weeks to provide some back and forth about the differences between the book and the show. Now, she was not able to leave any feedback last week because she had other engagements, but she did have a voicemail for us. Now, this one, I haven't listened to it yet. She warned me it's a little bit long, but I think she's making up for last week as well. So let's see what Daphne had to say.
Hi, Rima and Paik. I just wanted to say thanks again for giving the series a chance and covering it. It's been a lot of fun to listen to you guys talk about the episodes each week and come up with your theories. I hope the finale gave you a satisfying conclusion to the story. For me, knowing that Stephen King was able to bring his book to life and it's his works, I'm totally down with the way that it ended. And even though there were some differences, I can definitely live with it. There were differences from the book. And I know I've said it before that I've been keeping a few notes to share at the end because I wasn't sure if things were going to come up in any of the episodes. So here we go. The long boy has a very different look as explained in the book. It's more of like this worm-like creature with no legs and patchy sides. It's also something Scott had seen glimpses of in reflections, in water glasses, in mirrors. It was a creature that Scott had always felt was watching him. At times, Lisey kind of felt that way too. In the book, Scott did leave Lisey a story and a hard lemonade. And like the series, story really explained what happened to his father, which was one of the questions I had throughout the book. Like, what happened to Andrew? It was similar right down to the pickaxe and the note. One thing not mentioned is Scott's father in the book had snuck upstairs with the intent to kill Scott with the pickaxe at one point. And at the age of 10, Scott was forced to kill his father at his father's insistence when the madness was starting to take over. Although Amanda was present when Dooley arrived, Darla was not. Darla's role was actually much smaller in the book. She was not present when Lisey brought Amanda back from Booyah Moon. To keep them safe, Lisey and Amanda actually called Darla to tell her that Amanda had left Greenlawn and been moved to Derry so that Darla and one of the other sisters, Canty, would go to Derry and not just pop up at Lisey's out of the blue when Dooley was there. There was no Greenlawn safe word either. In the book, Scott died after eating berries after dark in Booyah Moon, which caused him to become very ill. Like the series, he traveled to Booyah Moon several times to try to get to the pool, but it was blocked by the long boy. He was able to temporarily recover after licking dew off some of the leaves, but that was just a temporary recovery. Lisey did donate Scott's papers to the Fogler Library at the University of Maine, which is a real place. Stephen King actually graduated from University of Maine in 1970. That's where he met his wife, Tabitha, and they've made various donations to the school over the past few decades. Although the ketamine syringe was featured in the book, Lisey never touched it. She found it afterwards when she was visiting Booyah Moon for one last time. One earlier thing that was not mentioned in the series but was in the book was a conversation that Lisey and Scott had while under the Yum Yum tree. Scott basically told her that having children was not an option for him and that if she wanted to have kids, they could not get married. This gave Lisey some conflict at times because I think she kind of maybe wanted to have kids. It isn't that Scott couldn't have kids, it's that he chose not to have children, I think because of the things that were running in his family. I have a couple other little things. Dooley did not know Gerd Allen Cole, which is Scott's shooter. They did not live in a mental facility together. Lisey did not give the silver spade to the long boy in exchange to be able to walk down to the pool. She actually didn't see the long boy again after the long boy killed Dooley. Dooley's body did not show up in her pool. Officer Dan did not die in the book. I don't think he was even at Lisey's when everything went down. And Scott did not receive this long boy handled wand from a fan. That didn't happen either. Those are pretty much all of my thoughts. I did have to cull this list down because I was trying to keep this voicemail short, but there were just some things I really wanted to mention. Again, thanks so much for covering this series. I hope that you're happy with the ending, and I'm super excited for you guys to cover Sweet Tooth next. So, thanks, guys.
Oh, that was wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Lots of interesting little tidbits and stuff in there that I knew would be, and I was excited to hear.
Yeah, that was so great. Gosh, I loved all of that. I loved hearing all those differences and your thoughts on that, Daphne. I appreciate you taking all that time to kind of not just talk about, you know, what you thought about the series and each episode, but just explaining to all of us some of those differences, because I think it's kind of interesting. Now I feel like I need to go read the flipping book. So thank you. And just as a side note, now today is the day that we're recording. This happens to be Daphne's birthday. So
it does.
Happy birthday, Daphne.
Happy birthday. Yeah.
Thank you so much for all that you've done for Strange Indeed and the support and writing in and just being supportive, like behind the scenes and stuff too. So happy birthday. Hope you have a great day. We love you. All right. One more voicemail from our good friend, Steve Brown. Where would we be without a voicemail from Steve? So let's see what he has to say.
All right, here we go. Final episode of Lisey's story for Apple TV and Strange Indeed, Rima and Paik. I love it. We don't start in the Booyah Moon. We start with the sisters wondering where Lisey has gone. That's where we start. I love it. Where did he take her? No, she took him.
Are you okay? No.
Hand stuff freaks me out. Like, I can't handle the hand stuff. Nice. She shot him with a ketamine. We've been waiting for that. This last, three episodes? You are food for the long boy. How rough is that, man? Adding, insult to injury. Don't just absorb him, but, throw him down on the ground again and, let him start to crawl and then grab him and then absorb him. Yeah. Oh, okay, now I get it. This is my second time watching. So she went back. She got healed by the pool and then went back to the real world. Oh, you are going to need to clean that pool. Well, my darling. All right, Craig. I'm with you. I know you're fishing for information, but a good officer, maybe for your department. But yeah, sure, he was a good friend. There's a lot of time left in this episode, so I remember the first time I watched it, wondering what story we're going to get to close out. I don't know. Does it count as a mic drop when it's a flashback to when they said the name of the episode and the name of the series? I'll give it to him. Mic drop, Lisey's story. Okay, what's the Fogler? Because that's who she's donating all his papers to. The Fogler. I just want to say, Julianne Moore is hauntingly beautiful in this movie with the music in the background. Just amazing. It's really depressing how Scott's home life as a child got worse. So much worse. I like when Stephen King ends his stories on a sweet note. Wow, a really great one. I don't know if I want to read the book because some graphic stuff, but man, can't wait to hear you guys talk about this one. Sorry I went long.
fantastic.
Yeah, it was great.
Thank you, Steve, as always. I'm happy that you stuck with us too for the series. Always appreciated. What a bunch of great feedback we've gotten from our listeners. You know, even when they aren't always sure of the choices that we make when we decide to cover things, and even if they're a little like, I don't know if I'm into this, they stick with us. So thank you guys so much for sticking with us.
Constant listeners. Is that
constant listeners? You're my constant listeners. But thank you everyone for participating with us, because you're a part of this too. You know, this is all of us. So thank you for your feedback.
Always really appreciate it. You guys make this show just as much as we do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I wouldn't be anywhere without my listener involvement and engagement. And I hope on that note that you guys will stick with us, because next week on Strange Indeed, we are moving on from Lacey's story, since we have just wrapped the finale. We, as we mentioned last week on our episode, we are going to cover the Netflix show titled Sweet Tooth. It is already out. I think it came out around the same time as Lacey's story. So it's been out around the same time.
I think right? They both premiered the same night.
I think it was the same night.
Exactly the same night. I think so.
I think I remember that. And I know many folks may have already watched it. If you haven't, or if you have, I mean, it doesn't matter to me, but you know, I would hope that if you've watched it, you'll maybe do a rewatch with us, or if it's your first time watching, that you will join with us. It's our first watch. Of the series. Next week, we're going to be covering episode 1 of Sweet Tooth, titled Out of the Woods. So, and I did not put a description
in
there.
Excited to rewatch that one, because that's the only one I've watched so far.
Yes, Pakes got a little bit of a heads up. We'll go ahead and full disclosure. As he mentioned last week, he did already go ahead, because he was really, you really wanted to watch it anyway, right? You were curious about the material and wanted to watch it. And then that was what kind of got your interest peaked, like, oh, we should cover this on Strange Indeed. So you stopped at that point. Yeah. And so you haven't seen it. You don't know the ending. You've only seen that first episode. So I'll allow it. but no, I'm totally fine with that. Sometimes it's what it takes before. I mean, how do you know if something might be good if you haven't seen that first one? So I don't know that I would have decided to do it had you not been excited about doing it. So yeah, we're going to cover that one. So hopefully you guys will stick around for that one. I've heard great things. A lot of people have had, you know, comments that I've read that have said that they really, really enjoyed it. So hope you guys join us for that. And in the meantime, we are excited that you followed us to Booyah Moon, but please follow us on Twitter at StrangeTCast.
You can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/StrangerTCast.
And you can email us at StrangerThingsCastPod@gmail.com. And you can also find us on the TV Time app.
You can find Strange Indeed and a bunch of other great podcasts at podcastica.com. And go out and leave a review for Strange Indeed on Apple Podcasts.
Speaking of great podcasts, be sure to check out Peek and Daphne on their podcast called Run for Your Lives. And would you like to give a sneak peek at what you have or what your most recent release is, or what you have coming out for next week?
Yeah, the most recent past release, of course, was Lake Placid. As I talked about that last week.
Yay.
And then this week's episode, just... you know, a little movie called The Meg. And we had a guest host on there, just a little someone people might know as Rima Jo from the podcast people might know as Strange Indeed. So
yeah, I said that on purpose, just so I could get my plug in there. No, I'm kidding.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, yep, that will be coming out this week. If it's not, it'll be out on Friday. So soon.
Sweet. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was great having you back on. And
oh, thanks.
Talking about sharks.
You know, I love sharks. I love talking about sharks. And it was Shark Week last week. So totally appropriate that we recorded The Meg during Shark Week. I loved it. I always have a great time with you guys. I was truly honored to be a guest again for The Meg, and really happy that you guys asked. So can't wait to hear it when it comes out.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Awesome.
All right, that is our show. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Until next time, I'm Raymond.
And I'm Paige.
And Cindy Barrick is Strange Indeed.